Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, howdy, y'all. Happy Valentine's Day to Jamie and to all the horse women out there. I am Glenda Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And happy Valentine's Day. I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona. I'm a little sick, but you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 14th, 2012, episode 337. Good morning, horse world.
We'll always love you.
I mean, you know, it was honestly a really tough weekend for me because there's one person that, when I was 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I looked up to more than anybody. And, you know, I told you about my whole fascination with Kevin Costner. The fact that a Kevin Costner and Whitney Houston movie was coming out where she was singing it and he was, like, super strong and awesome, that was probably one of the greatest movies of my youth, was The Bodyguard. And Whitney Houston, when, you know, she did just album after album of awesomeness, and I had a life-size poster of Whitney Houston dancing.
Oh,
she was like, oh, I want to dance with somebody. I want to feel the heat with somebody. Yeah, that from that video, I had a life-size poster of Whitney Houston on my door, so every time I would go in and out of my room, I'd say, hi, Whitney. Bye, Whitney.
I didn't realize you had a Whitney Houston fascination.
I think at that point, every 12-year-old girl did. I remember when Britney Spears came around, and I was like, I get it, because Britney is my Whitney. And Whitney Houston lived in Atlanta for a very long time, and I tried and tried and tried to find her because I always thought, because I've known she's had some problems. That's what happens when you get involved with the wrong man, Bobby Brown. And I've known she's had some problems. I always thought if I could meet her, I could fix her. I could talk to her and be like, Whitney, listen, we got to get this stuff straightened out. And so I was telling Chad this story, and I got really upset and mad when I was telling him. So I'll try to do it at least a little less emotional. There was a restaurant in Atlanta, and my boyfriend at the time, his name was Jeff, was like, I'm going out with the guys tonight. I'm going out with the guys. And I was like, fine, go. I don't care. You know, whatever. Obviously, very healthy relationship. So he goes out with the guys, and turns out in the paper the next morning, I read about the fact that Whitney Houston was standing on top of the bar singing at this place that he was at, and he saw the whole thing. And I was like, how dare you not call me and tell me Whitney's on the top of the bar dancing, singing. She needs me. Why didn't you call me? I could have come out. He's like, oh, it's with the guys. I'm like, you know how much I love Whitney. So I'm still mad at Jeff about that whole thing. That was
You definitely haven't let that one go.
You know what? I actually thought, I think I'm friends with him on Facebook, and I actually think I should Facebook and be like, I'm still pissed about that. Because Whitney and I were supposed to be friends. I was going to fix her, and now look what happened. It's all your fault. So I might have stalked her a little bit in Atlanta, because I really think she should have been my best friend, and I feel really bad. And I'm just, Whitney, I'm going to miss you, darling. I'm going to miss you. Sad. I'm done.
Yes, and I guess the reports are in now. They're still not quite sure what happened. They sort of determined that she didn't drown. They know that.
Oh, really?
They're assuming that they're assuming there wasn't enough water in her lungs. So they're assuming that the large quantity of prescription medicines in the room had something to do with it.
Oh, just devastating and tragic, and And, you know, unfortunately, if I can just get on my high horse for half a second here, there are people in your life, if you have drug problems, that enable you. And it is just as much their fault. And I'm speaking from experience. And unfortunately, there are people that enable people that have problems like that. And it is just as much their fault, and they should be ashamed of themselves. Because trust me, I've seen some interviews with some of her friends, and they're like, and the interviewers are like, how do you think she looked, you know, 6 weeks ago? She was beautiful. She looked perfect all the time. There's nothing wrong with Whitney. I'm like, you are out of your dang mind. And but there's people around drug users that enable them. And if you're one of those people, you need help just as much as they do. Carry on.
Yeah, that's true. And they did say that they are now starting the investigation of her doctors as well. You know, after the Michael Jackson thing, with the whole trial with the doctor, you know, I'm sure that that's why that happened. And we'll see what comes out about that. But it was sad. It was, she was getting ready for the Grammys. I didn't watch the Grammys, did you?
Yeah, well, I watched the one part where Jennifer Hudson sang, I Will Always Love You.
Can you wake up Chad right now, cranking up the stereo?
Probably. I don't care. It's Whitney. I don't care. He can wake up to Whitney. It makes your day better. when Jennifer Hudson sang it, I was just in tears. I kept just kind of flipping back through trying to catch something about her. And I don't know, the news hit me so hard. I was upset. You know, and this is, like, when Michael Jackson died, I was not upset. I was like, oh, okay, you saw that coming. And you pretty much saw this coming, too, with her unfortunate last, like, 20 years. But it was just, this one hit me really hard. I've been kind of depressed for a couple of days. Sorry. I watched The Bodyguard last night, and I was bawling. Chad's like, are you okay? And I'm like, I don't know.
That probably wasn't a good idea.
And then at the end, they put up a sign, as, you know, in memory of Whitney Houston. I'm like, oh, she's gone. I don't know what's wrong with me. And, yeah, I
poor
did wake
Chad.
Up Chad. Here he is. Sorry, he just walked in.
Jennifer, sorry, what's coming up on today's show? We'll give Jamie a chance to gather herself here and get yelled at by Chad. Oh, we can't hear you, Jennifer. Are you there?
Oh, here, I'm here. I was
okay.
Busy sniffling and blowing my nose.
Thank you, sister.
On today's Back in Lexington, Kentucky Tuesday, we've got sappy stories, mind-numbing misadventures, and plenty of poorly planned hijinks plus guests. And that's what we've got, so stay tuned.
Okay. We can tell she was in a rush this morning to get everything hooked back up at the studio.
I still don't think
we,
I've got it all hooked back up.
We do have a number of guests coming on today. I think we have three guests, so we're going to get to those a little bit later. But first, we have a couple of daily winnies now that we're back here live. First one I have is Dwayne from EasySignsOnline.com. Thank you so much for allowing us to broadcast from there last week. We really appreciate it for hospitality. We're going to talk a little bit about our weekend down in Ocala. We actually came back a day early. We can talk about why we did that as well. And I also have one of these. Happy birthday to Jacob Arnold, Junior Equestrian of the Year last year, the driver out of Florida. So happy birthday, Jacob. I think he's all of maybe 18 now. All right, yours.
Well, since I've already covered Whitney this morning, obviously the other thing on the docket is Black Caviar Winter, 18th straight race. The horse is unstoppable. Let's hear it.
They're off. Black Caviar, probably one of the best getaways we've seen of her. Doubtful Jack beat her out, but she's right up there with Dan Xylem and Midas Touch. She settles down fourth, about a length off the lead, which is dawdling at the early part of the race. And as they settle down, Dan Xylem now goes clear by about a length to Midas Touch. Doubtful Jack is third and a length and a half away, then Black Caviar. She's four lengths away from the leader. Then Precedence and Elo, Playing God out wide, pulling his way around them. And then Southern Speed and Efficient back last. So Dan Xylem had the lead now, going to the side of the course, a length and a half, Midas Touch. In on the rails in third place, in Doubtful Jack. And fourth on the outside is Black Caviar, idling along about three lengths away from the leader. Then Playing God, Precedence, Elo, Southern Speed and Efficient is last of all, 8 lengths from the front runner. At the 600, Dan's Island the leader. Midas Touch is second, a length and a half away. Doubtful Jack. Nolan hasn't gone yet on the great mare, Black Caviar. She's creeping into it. Tracked up by Playing God, Elo, Precedence, Southern Speed and Efficient. Now they're on the swing. Black Caviar within a length of the leader, which is now Midas Touch, who claimed Dam's Island. Into the straight now, Black Caviar, the awesome racehorse, races to the front. She's kicked away now. She's home. She's 3 lengths clear. Playing God is running on. Southern Speed is making ground. But the pride of Australia is the greatest show on earth. Black Caviar won it by 3 lengths to Southern Speed, Playing God, and then either Elo, Doubtful Jack, or Midas Touch across the track. Dan's on.
I mean, come on. If you could watch it, it is actually posted on our Facebook page. If you could just go watch this, you can't plan a sprint to go any better than this. Now, mind you, this is not like, while we love Rapid Redux, so, you know, this is not like claiming races. These are grade one sprints. So this is as tough as the competition gets. And she settled down just about fourth place, sat fourth the whole entire time. And did it not look like all of a sudden she just kind of like, okay, I'm going to run now. And everybody else just kind of stops. And she just blows it out.
It looked like that.
I mean, it's, you know that, she just makes it look so easy. It's just amazing. I love her.
That puts her prize money to more than $4.74 million for a sprinter in Australia. That is an incredible amount of money. Now, as we understand it, she's going to be heading to Europe, right?
Apparently going to Dubai.
Spring, summer. Yeah. So we'll see what happens over there. But once again, she proves that she pretty much took it away handily, no problem.
The trainer, his quotes like afterwards are, it's mind-boggling. What she does to good horses is unbelievable. It's amazing. And then he goes on to say, his name is Peter Moody, he goes on to say, we've never pushed her. Can you imagine if they had to push that horse, how fast she would go? Holy cow, she's amazing. 5 years old, awesome.
Well, they're out of us speaking. Let's stay in Australia for a minute because there is a romantic Valentine story out of Australia and involves a racehorse, too. A Sydney resident by the name of Anthony Skiberius is really upping the Valentine's Day for the rest of us horse guys. And the way he did that is by naming a racehorse after his sweetheart, and that racehorse is going to run today. Anthony's ultimate Valentine's Day card comes in this little racehorse that's going to, I think it's a pacer or a trotter, I'm not sure which. You want the name of the horse here, Jamie? Ready?
No, it's the race. He named the whole race after her.
Oh, okay. I thought it was just a horse. No, you're right. It's the whole race. I guess he bought the whole rights to the whole race. You're absolutely right. I read that wrong. Then the name of the race is Love You Madly, Fran Pace. Love You Madly, Fran Pace. So I know. So I don't know how you beat that. Us horse husbands, we're just screwed because we're just going to be buying flowers and stuff, and this guy named, you know, gets a whole race after his.
What it doesn't say in this story is whether or not they actually, like, she knows about it. Or he's just going to take her to the track. It's a standard bred race. It's a pace. Is he just going to take her to the track and let her read the program?
I don't know. It doesn't say that. And it also does say that both of them are scheduled to make the post-race presentation to the winners in the winner's circle. So he bought and sponsored the race is what he did. You're right. Yeah. Well, good for him.
That's awesome. 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 I love it. Now, what exactly are y'all's plans for Valentine's Day?
Actually, we've postponed Valentine's Day for one day. We're gonna celebrate Valentine's Day tomorrow. Because I haven't had time. We've been on the road for 5 days. I haven't had 2 minutes alone to do anything. So we've temporarily postponed Valentine's Day till tomorrow.
Jennifer, see, this is a testament to men not planning ahead. It's not like he didn't know he was going to be on the road for 5 days. Why didn't you just do something before? Jennifer, honestly, give me your honest-to-God feelings on how you feel about postponing Valentine's Day.
In an effort to maximize my Valentine's Day payoff, I have agreed to a 24-hour postponement.
See? It's all
my
selfish anyway.
God. Brilliant.
If I had not agreed to the postponement, I would have gotten a box of M&Ms and a kiss on the cheek.
No, I ate them all this morning.
Well, then that was a really good answer. But, you know, knowing men, you know, Glenn, you could have shopped Thursday. You could have shopped Wednesday. Any of those days.
I'll tell you what, in my defense, I would not be getting her this particular clever gift had it not been for the delay. And it was not even on the radar last week for this particular gift. So now it's on the radar today, so I can get her this gift. Yeah, we just got in late last night from Ocala on our, after our 12-hour drive from Ocala up here. We were supposed to go to Universal Studios yesterday, to Harry Potter World, and we just had a change in plans, and we had to come home yesterday. And, of course, we go to Florida, and it's the coldest two nights they've had all year. It was down to 22 degrees both nights.
What? It froze? Yeah. Oh, the orange trees are going to be in trouble.
Well, they were covering, everybody was covering their little plants with sheets and doing all that kind. But the difference between there and here is if it's 22 degrees here, that means it's going to get up to 29 during the day. Down there, it still gets up to 60 during the day. So that's not too bad. I'll take that.
Wow. Wow. So remember, Glenn, I told you that you were supposed to go to Harry Potter World. And a Valentine's Day gift, you cannot give Jennifer a magic wand because the wand chooses you, Glenn. The wand chooses you.
I know, and now I got to wait for the wand to choose me because we didn't get to go.
You didn't get any butterbeer or anything. What a bummer. So you must have had a good reason.
We did have a good weekend. I will have to say this, guy. I have some comments on Ocala, Florida, which also claims to be the horse capital of the world. Lexington and Ocala have this battle going on for years now. And this was the first trip down there. My brother lived down there. It was the first time that we actually got to drive around Ocala and take a look at all four corners. We went out into the Ocala National Forest. We were all over the place. We got to see all the horse country. By the way, everything around Ocala is horse country. And the way we thought of Ocala, and I got to say I'm sort of changing my tune a little bit, we sort of thought Ocala was a cross between Norco and Lexington, Kentucky. It's sort of like halfway in between because the farms aren't as big as here in Lexington. Here you have the big, big thoroughbred farms, and that's what really Lexington is. Down there you have everybody that has 5-10 acres, 3 acres has horses, and so it's a little bit bigger than the half acre lots they had in Ocala. Sort of in between, but there are some beautiful, beautiful horse country around Ocala, and everybody seems to have horses. It's amazing. My brother lives in an equestrian community just west of Ocala a little bit, and it has 400 houses, and over 200 of the homes there have horses. So you're driving through this wooded equestrian community, and there just are horses in every backyard, and they all have 3 to 5 acres. So, Jamie, imagine Norco, with each of them having more land, thank God, because that was all pretty tight in there. But there were just horses everywhere. I have to say that I'm almost leaning towards Ocala getting horse capital of the world because there just seem to be a whole lot more riders. Yeah, I got to tell you. I'm almost convinced
How
now.
How dare you? You are going to get pushed and driven out of Lexington, Kentucky with stakes and fire and shovels. As a resident, current resident of Lexington, Kentucky, and I as a former resident of Lexington, Kentucky, how can you say that? Oh,
well,
you know what?
I have to tell you.
Not everything in Lexington is... Go ahead.
Well, the whole thing with the horse park and everything, obviously. By the way, the horse park just had to get an infusion of $3.5 million from the government because it's that far in the hole. Yes, it makes no money. It's in red every year. So the state had to kick in $3.5 million just to keep it going this year. And the report actually just came out on the World Equestrian Games, too. They ended up losing $1.5 million for the World Equestrian Games. They're still not sure how they're going to even pay their debts at this point. So it was, you know, they say Olympics. You are down there in Atlanta. I'm sure you heard all of that about the Olympics at the time. They say those, like the World Equestrian Games, the Olympics, they never make money. They always end up losing a ton of money.
Well, you know what I found with the, because the Olympics were in Atlanta when I was living there, and I just graduated high school, and 1996, everybody's talking about, oh, the Olympics are coming, it's going to be a party, and it's going to be just this huge money-making opportunity. And, you know, I knew people all over the place. People were popping up bars that were tents and restaurants and all these different places that they just thought visitors would flood. And there's really not that many people that go or spend money. It's weird. It was such a strange thing because everybody was warned about the awful traffic. And, yeah, there was traffic getting in and out of the events. And I remember I tried to go to the 3-day show jumping phase. And by the time I got into the park with the rest of the other million people, there was 3 rides left. So it was terrible traffic there, but on the freeway, it really wasn't that affected. All these people lost their houses because they could not afford to pay the debts because of the business ventures they had started because of the Olympics. So I really was kind of the World Equestrian Games kind of like that, where people just were like going crazy.
Yeah. They tried to do other events around the World Equestrian Games. What they found was people just weren't leaving the park. They weren't going other places. They were tired by the time you walk around that 1,200-acre horse park all day. You're just, you know, going to Rolex. You get exhausted walking around there all day, especially if you're, you know, you're trying to see different things at different ends of the park. But it was interesting. Ocala is obviously much flatter. It is, you know, the palm trees sort of add to it. We did take a ride up to Hits, which is where they have the Hunter Jumper shows that go on for 6 weeks. What, Jamie, let me tell you, what it is, a big complex that is just ring after ring after ring. There must be, Jennifer would probably have a better guess than that, 15, 20 rings that they're doing, that they're showing in at all day long. This place was a circus. There were horses everywhere, horse trailers everywhere.
Imagine New York City was a horse show grounds. It's like that. It's like a giant metropolis horse show. It's kind of wild.
Big tents for the horses and everything, but they're just freaking horses everywhere. I mean, everywhere.
Now, see, I talked to Chris Stafford on Friday after she went to the horse park, and she said, oh, the
now,
Ocala
now,
horse park.
Let's clarify this. Hits is not the horse park. The horse park is separate from Hits.
Okay.
We did end up then going to the horse park for the 3-day event, and we did that. It was very windy that day, and right when we got there, guess who was the first rider when we showed up on cross country day? We walk out, we stand by the water jump, and guess who comes through? Jessica Phoenix.
Oh, good.
It was so cool. Yeah, so that was kind of neat. That was the first ride we saw. It was very windy that day. And the horse park there is kind of neat because you can see a lot of the cross. I guess it's sort of like the Galway where you were. You can see a lot of the cross-country jumps because it's fairly flat.
Right, right. Well, I know Chris told me she was disappointed in the horse park because all it was a horse park. And I'm like, duh, not every place in the world is like the Kentucky Horse Park. There's no other place like that. You know, there's no Florida, you know, the Ocala Horse Park doesn't have, like, you know, a museum and a parade of breeds and a Hall of Champions. That is only at the Kentucky Horse Park. The actual other horse parks are actually just where you park your car and go ride your horse. That's pretty much
right,
it.
And that's what... It was beautiful, though. The arenas were lovely. I mean, it was nice. But I'll tell you what, when you pull in there, you overlook, because, again, it's fairly flat in Florida, you overlook the entire parking lot with all the trailers. Oh, my God. There's still some money left in the horse world because there are some big-ass trailers out there. Wow.
Wow. Well, that's fantastic. I'm glad you guys went. I'm glad you got to tour around and have fun. It's definitely a great vacation for anybody. My mom's still mad that you didn't go visit her. She lives about half an hour away. She did request that you come. I did not tell you about it because I figured you were a little busy.
Now, Jennifer's getting me in trouble on Facebook now. She just posted the question of the day. Glenn's moving toward the dark side. Does Lexington, Kentucky, or California deserve horse capital of the world? Horsetown, USA is sewn up thanks to Norco, California. And so far, there's been two votes for Lexington. So I'm going to get
three. Crucified. And now four, because I'm typing it.
Did you see that somebody just posted? We're totally off track here. But did you see the story that was just posted on our Facebook page? And let me see what it's. Oh, I think it's a Facebook page trying
it's
to get
Toadless
back.
Yeah, that's all it is. I did the same
Gow.
Thing.
I thought it was that he was going back, but there's a Facebook page trying to get Toadless back to Edward Gow. Keep trying. I don't think that's going to happen. But that was our trip to Ocala. We had a great time. It was fun. We drove through Atlanta. We stopped at IKEA on the way home. We did stop there in Atlanta. And,
did you buy anything?
No, we didn't buy anything because our Jeep was already pretty full. But it is fun just to walk through IKEA. I mean, it's just experience. You got to do it at least once a year.
Do you watch that show 30 Rock ever?
No, we've never watched it.
Oh, my God, it's so funny. They did a whole show on IKEA and how IKEA is the places where relationships end. Like, you walk through IKEA, and one person's like, oh, my God, I totally need this plastic heart bank that's going to sit on our coffee table. And it's like, no, you're not buying that. It's terrible. But we are buying this coffee table. I don't want that coffee table. They did a whole episode on how when you go to IKEA with your significant other, basically they try to break you up. That's their whole point. And I bought.
I'll tell you what. I can see that because Jennifer and I didn't agree on almost anything we saw yesterday, with one exception of this chair we found that we both liked. But otherwise, I can see how that's true because we pretty much didn't agree on anything. And of course, you know, IKEA is not known for the highest quality furniture in the world. But we love going through IKEA when you go through the little rooms they've created. This is what you can have in 400 square feet. And it's so cool how much stuff they pack into 400 square feet. This is just
now,
cool. That is pretty neat.
What they don't say on the signs around there that this is what you can have in 400 square feet if you sit down and you work on putting it together for the next 3 years. Oh, my God. I bought an entire room full of furniture. Now, mind you, when I moved here to Arizona, I had to throw most of it away because it fell apart. But I did put it together myself. And maybe I thought maybe I didn't do it right, but it's like, hey, get some wood glue and a screwdriver. Seriously? I don't want to put crap together. I thought I was, like, going to go down to the warehouse and buy it, and I come down, and it's like this box. And I bought two nightstands, a large dresser and a small dresser. I got them home. I started crying. I was like, I can't do this. This is horrible. I had one of the radio station engineers come to my house to help me put it together. That's what you, because the instructions are not in English. Okay.
Right.
They don't tell you that either. It's pictures.
Yeah.
Here, now put this little thing here. I was like, I'm done. I'm going to throw it away. I can't even deal with it. It's horrible.
But I'll tell you what, though, I think every college dormitory room in America has at least one piece of IKEA furniture, don't you think?
It should. It's cheap and it's small.
It'll last you just enough to get through college, and then you throw it away.
Don't move too many times, though. Don't move. Definitely.
All right, let's talk about Questioning Collections Product of the Week, and then hopefully we'll be getting to our first guest. Hi, everybody. Glenn here, and I am with Debbie from Equestrian Collections with the Equestrian Collections Product of the Week. And, Debbie, today we're talking about a tie ring.
Yes, I want to talk about the Toe Clap Blocker Tie Ring this week. This is a little gizmo. It's like in the form of a figure eight. The small ring at the top attaches to a snap that you can move around. You can move this anywhere. It can be across part of your cross ties. It can be on your trailer. It can be really anywhere. The bottom ring is larger, and it has a tongue that comes up the middle. What you do is you take your lead rope And when you pull the tongue down, you lay the lead rope on top of the tongue and push it back up. There's a little magnet there that will attach it to the ring. So essentially what you have is a figure eight with a tongue up the middle and the lead rope that goes around the tongue. What this does is it allows the horse to pull back. He does not get loose. His halter does not break. But when he pulls back and realizes that he is not tied up tight, they relax. It's perfect for teaching babies to stand tied to a trailer. It's great if you're on a trail ride and you're a little bit nervous. You put this on, and if something spooks them, doesn't matter. They might pull back, but they will not get loose, and they'll relax once they know that they're not tied.
That's the Toe-Clat Blocker Tie Ring on us. These segments are going to cost me money, Debbie, because now I have to buy a couple of these. And you can buy them at equestriancollections.com. Just search for Blocker Tie Ring, and you'll bring them up. They're made of stainless steel, too, so good, sturdy stuff. You can find that again at equestriancollections.com. Well, there was something that did happen over the weekend in Ocala while we were there, and it was an unfortunate, just tragic accident. And I don't know that I've ever heard of this happening before. I guess it might have, but one of the hyperbaric oxygen chambers that they use down there actually exploded while a horse was in it. And it was a six-year-old thoroughbred gelding that was owned by Jacqueline Mars and ridden by Lauren Kiefer. This was put out by the United States Eventing Association, issued this press release. And there were 30 other horses contained in the building that were okay. Basically, the whole end of this building was blown off. And unfortunately as well, there was a person killed. One of the people that were there and responsible for the chamber was actually killed in the explosion. It was just tragic. And so our best goes out to her family. Her name was Erica Marshall. Another woman, Sorka Monnelly, was injured and is apparently still in the hospital. So our best to everybody, to the horse's owner, and to the families of those that were affected by this tragic accident. They said you could hear the explosion for up to 30 miles away. Now, we did not hear it, but it was something else. They think it was the horse actually kicked out, and that a spark from the horseshoe caused the explosion. That's what they're thinking. And of course, this is pure oxygen. It's 100% oxygen under pressure in these chambers. So if you have a spark, I mean, that's basically a bomb at that point, and that's what happened. So it was tragic for everybody involved.
Oh, it's just an awful story, and definitely our hearts go out to them and to you know, the horse was owned by Jacqueline Mars, who's owned a bunch of Karen O'Connor's horses, so they lost a very promising upcoming horse, a six-year-old homebred named Landmark's Legendary Affair. So very sad for everybody involved, and I would say that, you know, unfortunately, the hyperbaric chambers are probably going to be a little bit, they're going to be a lot more careful with them. And who they put in them. So one report I did read on the local news down there in Florida was that they didn't sedate this horse. Now, that's alleged. I don't know. But usually they sedate every horse before they take him in. So I'm sure that's going to be looked at. And maybe, you know, the good thing that'll come out of this is they'll be a little safer.
We'll have to get thehorse.com under one of their Wednesday segments to talk about the chambers and what they do and, you know, why they use them and that kind of thing. Because I'm not sure I totally understand how it all works. So, you know, that would be kind of neat. We'll have to remember to have them do that at some point here. But let's get to a cheerier topic, and that cheerier topic is a website, and this is one of the newbie finalists for the ESMA Awards, and she runs a website called summit-equine.com. Her name is Claire, and we have her here this morning. Good morning, Claire.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you?
Good. Thank you so much for joining us today. Now, you're out in California, right?
I am indeed.
Well, thank you so much for getting up at this hour. We really appreciate it. I hope you've had a cup of coffee and you're ready to go.
I am. Thank you for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Well, now, it's summit-equine.com. Tell us about Summit Equine.
Well, Summit Equine is an independent nutrition consulting company. So I am an independent equine nutritionist, and I provide consulting services to, for the most part, horse owners, helping them determine what they should be feeding their horses so their diet is optimally balanced. I also do, you know, some referral work with veterinarians. I do some teaching, do a little bit of work with, you know, commercial companies who want help with technical riding and the like as well. But the main focus of my business is the, you know, individual horse owner, rider, trainer.
So you actually go out to their farms and you'll take a look at what they're feeding?
I will, yep. I have a lot of clients that I've actually never met that I work with remotely. So, you know, they send me the information that I need. Obviously, it's always very nice to go out to the barns. You know, sometimes you pick up little bits of information when you see the horses in person that owners don't necessarily think are important, you know, when they see them every day. But when you don't, you know, when you see them as a visitor, you think, hang on a minute, what's that? You know, you think, and then they share the information. But, I you know, I can work remotely too. And I have a lot of clients, in Connecticut and on the East Coast and the like that I've, and Canada that I've not met before, and who, you know, I hear back from and are very happy with the results that they've had. So it does work too remotely.
Do I hear a tinge of an accent there?
Oh, yes. I'm English.
Where does that
originally
tinge of an accent from? From where?
I was born in England and spent, you know, the first 18, 19 years in England, came over to the U.S. in the third year of my bachelor's as an education abroad student, and then went home, graduated from Edinburgh, and then came back to Davis, California for my master's and PhD. And then
so you decided that the warm, dry weather of California suited you better than the cold, wet weather of England? Is that what you, I'm hearing?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, let me ask you a question here. What's the biggest mistake people make when they're feeding their horses?
Not following the manufacturer's feeding directions. If they're feeding a commercially fortified feed, I see a lot of confusion, you know, especially with complete feeds. People misunderstand what that actually means. I think they think they mean that it's complete, sort of no matter how much of it they feed. So it's very common with the senior feeds that are complete feeds. I see people feeding, you know, 1, 2, 3 pounds when the feeding directions might be for sort of 18 pounds per day. You know, people are always shocked when I say that's how much they really should be feeding. Or even a performance feed that has an 8, 9 pound serving size and they're feeding, you know, 2 pounds per day. You know, they say, well, if I fed, you know, 8 pounds, 17 pounds, whatever the directions are, you know, either he'd buck me off or he'd be so fat, you know, and he wouldn't do anything. And I said, well, then that's not really the right feed for you from that manufacturer's lineup. You know, we need to find a feed for you that has the 2 pound serving size. So that's a big
mistake. So you're
finding
those people are underfeeding the amount of grain that they're supposed to be feeding? Is that what I'm hearing?
They're feeding the wrong grain. And by grain, I mean commercially fortified food. Because to me, grain is, you know, oats, barley, corn. Whereas that's another misconception. You know, people say grain, and I always have to clarify, what do you mean when you say grain? Because the term grain gets used for oftentimes anything that gets put in a bucket and gets fed. Whereas, you know, so traditionally grain is your grains, your oats, your barley, your corn. You know, something like a complete senior feed. I mean, it might not have a lot of grain in it, but people call it grain. So that's, you know, something else that has to be clarified. So
that's become the Kleenex, sort of like Kleenex, you know, you're absolutely right. That's what it's become. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, so I'm not necessarily saying people need to feed more grain. They just need to feed the correct grain. So they need to keep feeding the 1 or 2 pounds, but they need to feed a product that that's how much it was designed to be fed at. It was designed to be fed at 1 or 2 pounds, not designed to be fed at 8 or 9 pounds, and then they're feeding it at 2 pounds.
Okay, got it. Well, how about supplements then? We always talk about that. Are you finding that people are over-supplementing their horses or not supplementing enough?
I do find a fair amount of over-supplementation. I think there's a lot of, you know, people add a supplement, and then, you know, maybe they decide they need a calming supplement, so they add a calming supplement, or they just hoof supplement, or Sally down the barn aisle is using this product, and her coat looks great, so they add that one too, and then before you know it, you've got sort of 4 supplements added to the ration, and you can end up with, you know, some over-supplementation of some nutrients, and you can also end up with a diet that's really not very well balanced, which also is a problem because, you know, the ability of the horse to absorb some of the nutrients in the diet is impacted if they're not, you know, if it's not correctly balanced. So, yeah, oftentimes I can help people simplify their diets and get rid of products, which, you know, sometimes saves them money. Other times it's a matter of, you know, finding if we need an omega-3 supplement, then we find a source of omega-3. If maybe we need a vitamin E supplement, we find some vitamin E. So sometimes they end up adding more things to their ration, but they're adding the things that are needed specifically rather than lots of broad-based things that, you know, offer a lot of nutrients but not a lot of anything in particular.
So I want to just get back to real quick to the question about the grains, because I know that a lot of people, you know, have a hard time feeding a lot of grain, like 17 pounds or whatever. What are some of the grains? What are some of the grains that are designed? I mean, I'm trying to think of, like, besides like a starch, you know, the Wellsolve or whatever, what is a grain you can feed a little bit of that has all the daily nutrients in it that they need?
So most of the major manufacturers now have a product in their lineup that we call a ration balancer. So they have a small serving size, normally a 1 to 2 pound serving size per day. So thinking of national brands, for example, Purina has a product called Enrich 32 or Enrich 12. There's like Tenfield has a product called All Phase. I think who else? Triple Crown has one called Triple Crown 30. They also have a product that has a slightly larger serving size. You can feed up to 4 pounds. And off the top of my head, this is at 6:30 in the morning. I'm like, oh, my brain doesn't work quite as sharp.
I understand.
You need supplements.
They have another one that has a slightly bigger serving size. You can go up to 4 pounds. And then Nutrina has one called Empower Balance. So all of those companies have one. We have, you know, LMS out here on the West Coast. They have one called Super Supplement. We have another local company called Equiseeds. They have one called Equibalance. So, you know, depending on where you are in the country, you might have a sort of more local retailer brand that also has one. But there, if you go in and you ask your feed store, you know, I'm looking for ration balances, they should be able to point you in the direction of the ones they have available in your feed store.
Interesting. Good to know. See, I didn't know about that. Now I've learned something new today. That is why people should have voted for you for NESMA.
Well, thank you. And I think I'm sure that there are going to be some horses that even the, you know, the calories that you get from 1 to 2 pounds of a ration balance, that, you know, for those really easy keeper horses, you know, who you already got them on as the little amount of hay they're allowed to be fed, even the calories you get from a ration balance that maybe, you know, more than you want to add to a ration. And that's then when you end up looking at, you know, a supplement that will provide everything in 3 or 4 ounces instead of 1 or 2 pounds.
Well, you can find Claire's information. You can go to summit-equine.com, or you can just find her on her Facebook page. Just search for Summit Equine Nutrition. She puts all kinds of good information up there. I noticed one here, do I really need to buy that expensive horse feed, was an article that you did. So you can find all of that online. We appreciate you being on. And, of course, Claire's not just limited to California. Sounds like she can answer your call wherever you are and talk to you from there. Thank you so much, Claire, for joining us this morning.
Thank you both so much for the opportunity. Thanks so much.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you, Claire.
Bye-bye.
She's out your way where the weather is good. Well, our next guest is actually on here, Jamie, ready to go. You want to just dive right in?
I would love to. I would love to. You know, there's nothing that I prefer more than off-the-track thoroughbred, and I know that Glenn and Jennifer are big supporters of the off-the-track thoroughbred plate as well. And we are going to highlight every month one OTTB to kind of talk about and try to find a home for. Now, if anybody's in the market for a horse, or like me, you're not in the market for a horse and you get one anyway, I would like to introduce you to Amy, who is a horse trainer at New Vocation. Good morning, Amy.
Good morning.
Well,
yes, thank you for having me on.
Oh, well, we're delighted that you're joining us. Now, you are working at New Vocations and you are a horse trainer. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Yep, we have 16 here that we oversee, and we have 8 in our layup facility that's right down the road.
Well, tell us about the horse that we are going to highlight this month.
He's a cute little bay gelding named Native Tongue. He came to us a while ago, and he's 8 years old. He's 15-3, and he's out of Indian Charlie. He had 23 starts on the track, actually placed in half of his races and earned about $107,000. And he was retired, with his last race being March 30th of 2010. He went to live with somebody for a while just to have some downtime, and then he came to us at the end of last year.
Now, when people surrender a horse, like how does he get to your facility?
Mostly word of mouth. Our program director, too, she goes out and she talks to people at the track, and she has other involvements at the track, so that gives her opportunity to go out and kind of see the horses and talk to people about it. But a lot of it is word of mouth, and then they contact us, and then there's a process that they go through with a donor form that kind of tells us, you know, what their horse has been doing or the reason why they want to retire it. And we make sure that our priority is the horses directly off the track or very recently off the track because there's such a huge need for that. So then we go through the listing, and our program director and somebody else in the office will go through those and kind of decide what horses will fit our program, because the main criteria is that they have to be able to walk, trot, and canter sound so that they can go on and do another career, whether it's trail riding, dressage, eventing, hunters. They have to be able to do that once they're here, some of the rehab here, and oftentimes a lot of the rehab is done by the donors before they come. So that's sort of how our process goes. So it's always, you know, it's always trying to figure out what works best for our program.
So the horse comes to you, they've already kind of had their downtime, and here, you know, here's a horse that's just ready to go. So you take this horse, like Native Tongue, let's use him as an example. You know, one of the great things about adopting from New Vocations is the groundwork, and I'm not meaning on the ground, but the
right.
basics have been done for you. So if you're not qualified to take a horse off the racetrack and immediately, you know, put it to work or whatever, if you're not qualified, New Vocations does that for you, and that's what makes you guys such a special facility. Now, so you have Native Tongue. He comes to you. You started this horse, so tell us what you've done with him and how you started.
Yeah. Sure. When he first came, he definitely was still in race mode. He was one of the few, oftentimes when they come to us, you kind of know that they're done or ready for a change. He was not. He ended up having a bowed tendon, which is what caused him to be done racing. And so once that was rehabbed, he came to us. We gave him a little bit more time with that to make sure that that was all set and cold. And then, but he definitely was not quite done racing. So that's why we've been a little bit more careful in placing him, because he still thinks he's still very, has that great competitive spirit. And his sounds just like his sire, because his sire had that too. So he will be for like more of an advanced person. But our process with them is once they get some time to settle in, a week or two or whatever it takes, depending on the reason why they came to us, then we start with the basics of turnout, because that's always entertaining, because sometimes it's been years since they've been turned out, but since he had already had some turnout time, that makes the transition easier. Then we have to start the process of turning them out with somebody, and that's always a little bit heart-stopping. The best way thing we can do is pull their hind shoes and, you know, guess with our best judgment as to who's going to get along
and
with
pray.
You, and then put it in a safe environment, like we'll start with the indoor, and before we toss them out, and then outside turnout's always entertaining because they realize they've got freedom again. And then they go to work. Once they've kind of settled into that routine, we'll start with a light work. First few rides are an assessment, mental and physical. Our rider will get on. I'll stand in the middle and kind of watch the horses, and she and I will discuss sort of what we feel and see versus what she feels, how their mind works. And then usually within a few rides, we'll get a pretty good idea of level of rider that could handle them on the ground and under saddle, and also sort of which way to direct them. As to whether we think, okay, their physical limitations will keep them from jumping, physical limitations you know, don't. Like a bow is something once it's healed, you know, we're okay with that. And then sort of progress with what they need. The longer they're here, do other things with them. Like he does, he just stays three steps ahead of the rider. He is such a quick mind and such a, he wants to keep active, you know, going around and around circles is not his thing. So we do figures and transitions and ground pulls, and we'll probably start putting him over some little X's because that's how quick his mind is, and he gets it. Like one shot, we're done. Did a dressage test with him. Okay, we're done. What's next? Like, no, you don't have this down pat yet. But he thinks he's that, you know, he really is that smart and gets things rapidly. So we have to stay a step ahead of him and keep coming up with things for him to do. Others might not be at that level. They might be at the level where they just need to take things slowly and make sure that they're okay with a new program. And but probably the most amazing thing with all of them is that they come right in and they go to work. They've had good training at the track. They know their job in that respect. And so it's nice for us to get to see that and assess that. But it is a daily assessment of what the horse needs and where we think they would fit within a riding program for somebody. And he's no different. He's just a little bit more of a challenge because he thinks so fast and so far ahead that he's just going to take a little bit more of an advanced person that has that education to know how to keep things mixed up for him so that he keeps his mind in the ring and keeps thinking.
Couple things. He sounds like a thoroughbred. I mean, what you're describing,
yes, absolutely,
seems like just the typical,
yep,
very clever thoroughbred.
Yes.
The other thing is, you know, I'm watching videos right now. What's great about you guys is you can go to horseadoption.com/native-tongue and see this horse, and he is so stinking cute. You know how
he
Rachel
is.
Alexander kind of has that crazy blaze? That, oh, this horse, yes, has that too. And I've been watching him in the arena. There's a free lunging video, and
uh-huh,
my God, can that horse move? Holy,
yes,
cow.
Yes, and he loves to show off. Absolutely. He absolutely thinks that he, as soon as the camera turns on, he knows where it is. He knows exactly, you know, what he needs to do and has a ball with it. I mean, he truly thinks that he is all that, and he is. He's got rights to brag.
He sounds like an event horse to me. As clever,
yes,
as he is, and he,
yes,
learns stuff, he needs to be an eventer.
Yes, yeah, probably low level and definitely with somebody that, you know, can manage a bow because it's set, but it's still one of those things where, you know, you still have to keep an eye on it. And like any injury that a horse has had, it just takes some awareness of what that is. And, yeah, and that's why we're pretty careful and we're trying to educate people the best we can about, you know, the options for horses that have these injuries, what will bother them, what won't, you know, what to watch for and sort of how to proceed.
I got to tell you, I'm watching the same video Jamie is, the free lunging video.
Uh-huh.
And my God, this horse has a floaty trot. He just,
yeah,
floats.
Yeah, he does. Yep, and he thinks, he shows off. You can see what a character he is. Wants attention all the time. In the stall, sticks his head out, wants you to pet him, you know, wants attention. And, yeah, he is a ham, but he definitely demands attention from people because he knows he's special.
How about vices? Do you have any vices?
No vices. Nope.
Okay.
None at all.
Yeah. I mean, he could even go be a dressage horse with this,
yes,
walk. I'm watching the trail,
yes,
ride, and he's on a loose rein, and he,
yes,
is tracking up at least a foot in front of his front,
yes,
leg. I mean,
yeah,
what a walk.
Yeah.
Love,
yep,
him.
He's very athletic. Yes, very athletic. And there's things, I think, with the right person, he will, there's some brilliance there because he's got that mind, that performer's mind. And I think that somebody that sees that in him and just kind of laughs at him and goes with, you know, that kind of A-type personality will do very well with him. I think there's a little bit of brilliance in there that somebody can bring out.
Okay, now I'm just going to, just before we wrap this up here,
uh-huh,
you are training off-the-track thoroughbreds.
Yes.
And, Amy, I've got to ask, how many have you adopted from here?
We do out of this facility, we have 16 stalls here, and we did, I think, 146 out of this facility, but over 440 thoroughbreds and standardbreds total out of the program last year.
No. You're not understanding what I'm asking,
okay,
because what I'm asking is, if I worked there, I would,
yes,
have 12 horses.
Oh, no, no, no. No, it's easy because I pay board and I can only do one at a time. So it's pretty easy. I have one now. In fact, all of us here, we all have one or two from the program. So, yeah, they come through and eventually we snag one, but I only do one at a time. It's not hard for me because I don't have my own facility. If I did, I'd be in trouble. Definitely.
Honesty is the best. Yeah, I would have a big problem.
Yes.
Well, the horse, his name is Native Tongue, 8-year-old, 15 three-hand bay gelding. He's in Marysville, Ohio at that facility. Please go look at horseadoption.com and then look for all these wonderful thoroughbreds that have had a great beginning. Thanks to Amy and all of New Vocations trainers out there. And we just really appreciate you letting us highlight this horse. Last one we highlighted was the mare, My Wife Knows Everything. So
yes,
you just never know what you're going to find at New Vocations. And
right,
thanks for what you're doing. We really appreciate it.
Oh, well, no, we appreciate being able to talk about them and letting people know the horses that we have.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. We'll talk to you again next month about another one.
All right, sounds good. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you, Amy.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Oh, he's so cute. Oh, my gosh.
He is cute,
he is
isn't he?
Nice mover.
He's got a
like
beautiful
a warm
face.
Blood.
He looks very fine. His face looks very fine. He definitely has that thoroughbred-y face, for sure.
I love him.
Yeah, he's cute. Very cute. Well, for the Valentines out there, for all the women, the horse women out there, I have a special song. There's only one I could really play. And that is from Jared Rogerson on Valentine's Day. It's called, and I know it's Jamie's favorite. So this is my Valentine's gift to you, Jamie. You don't have to wait an extra day like my wife. I give it to you today because I didn't
that
have
means
to
you're cheap.
That's exactly right. Peace, love, and horses.
one thing that can't change anything. And she loves me, and that's the part that gets me. She's all about peace, love, horses, and me.
You know what? That just made my Valentine's Day. I love that song. I'm in the back here saying, it's all about peace, love, horses, and me. Sorry. I got carried away.
Does that mean I don't have to buy you a gift? Am I okay?
No, but I did post a card for you and all of our ponies online on our Facebook page. So if you want to go see my Valentine's Day card to... Well, it's really not to you. It's to all of our ponies. It's up on our Facebook page right now on Horses in the Morning. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning, brought to you today by the Horse Radio Network. That's our big sponsor. We've got her on the line, and you're going to have to ask her the question that you posted on Facebook, because there's a lot of people that have commented on how dare you ask if Lexington, Kentucky, or Ocala, Florida is the horse capital of the world, and it does not count. Your brother does not count. His votes do not count.
Well, it looks like somebody else is chiming in now. We had some Twitter comments from Angela at Horse Girl TV, who's claiming that Wellington, and I noticed Jillian's also chiming in that Wellington, Florida, is the horse capital of the world. So now we have
a
third of
the year.
What's that?
Only 3 months of the year, though.
That's true. That is true. Well, I want to find out from Victoria at Horse and Country TV over there in England if there is a city in England that claims to be horse capital of the world. Is there an area over there, Victoria, that claims that?
Well, there's a racing capital, which is Newmarket. They call it headquarters, and there's so many horses there. If you go out to Newmarket in the morning and watch all the horses work on Newmarket Heath, it's probably one of the equine wonders of the world, so everybody should go and do it once in their lifetime. So Newmarket's the racing capital, and I don't know, maybe Gloucestershire is the horsiest county in England. There's a lot of horses per square foot over there, so that's probably as close as we get.
Okay, all right, good. Well, then it looks like the battle is still between Ocala and Lexington here in the United States. We'll continue to see how the votes are counted. So far, it looks like Lexington is in the lead, so get your vote in on our Facebook page. Well, Victoria, welcome back. It's good to have you back again.
Thank you very much. Yes, Jenny ably stepped in for me last week, so I think she had a good time on the show.
Yeah, oh, we thought for sure at the end of the show that she was never coming back.
No, I think she had a great time.
We put her through the ringer pretty much last week. I was, We knew that if she didn't come back, you were still going to be here, see?
Yes, indeed. It's good.
So tell us what's going on over there. I saw on our show notes here about Josh Gifford.
Yeah, there was very sad news about Josh Gifford, who is, as some of your listeners might know, is the father of Tina Cook, Olympic event rider. Josh Gifford has been a jockey and then a trainer. He trained for several decades over here in England, and he very famously trained a horse called Aldeniti, who is the star of the film Champions, which is all about Bob Champion, who was a jockey who got cancer and ran national on board Aldeniti. So Josh Gifford trained that horse, and he's just been part of the racing world's fabric for so long, and it's very sad that he's died.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize that he was Tina Cook's dad.
Yes, indeed. His son Nick Gifford is a trainer, and then Tina went on to become a very successful event rider. And she actually rides quite a few X-race horses as well, and she rides out, I think, most mornings for her brother. So very steeped in racing is Tina.
Interesting. And then what is this about the farriers to help the horses in Egypt?
Yes, this is a very interesting expedition that a group of farriers from over here in England are heading out to Egypt because things are, you know, there's always been welfare issues in Egypt, but things have got a lot worse because of recent political troubles and kind of economic slowdown. And the horses that are, used to be used to give rides around the pyramids, interest has sort of dropped off, and so the owners aren't making enough money, and the horses are basically being neglected through a lack of funds. So these farriers are going out there to basically just shoe these horses and trim their feet and hopefully provide some relief and comfort for them.
Wow, you know, I didn't think about that.
To me, only a farrier would volunteer to go to a war zone to trim a horse.
Oh, yes. A very
dangerous place.
Definitely. And the group, which you can find out more about them on Facebook, under Cairo Farrier, they are currently raising money via an auction, and they're getting lots of famous riders to donate a lesson and then asking people to bid for one of the lessons with them. So if any of the British listeners want to have a look to see who's giving lessons, they should check out their Facebook page. And or maybe some American listeners could come all the way over just for a lesson with one of our top riders. So, yeah, definitely worth having a look.
Well, now, you also had the blog of the week and had a little bit of a naughty pony video.
Yes, I haven't seen this video before, and one of our bloggers had a bit of a spill off a young horse. He said that he felt like he was auditioning for the gymnastics team at the Olympics because he did a triple somersault and landed on his feet. And so he dug out this video that he'd found on YouTube of this little boy and a little grey pony, and it's possibly the naughtiest pony I've ever seen. And my first pony was quite a little minx. She, when I was on the lead rein, she was an absolute angel. And just that stage when I came off the lead rein, but I wasn't quite big enough and strong enough to control her myself, I used to regularly fall off 7 times a day. And so this brought back lots of memories for me. And this little pony, he just decides that he doesn't want to do what his rider is asking him to do. And he just puts in these perfect little butts. And the rider is amazing. He's very good at staying on board, but sometimes the pony gets the better of him.
There's well, now, who you're talking about, though, Victoria, because we've actually had them on our show before. And, of course, we're talking about Ross and his little pony, Ed. Ed,
yes,
is the naughty pony. Who apparently every time they would take Ed to the trainers, because Ed is very naughty and starts bucking and just basically figures out a way to get Ross on the ground, they would never be able to do it. He would never do it in a lesson. So Mom started videotaping and put together this montage of Ed either bolting, bucking, running into the fence, throwing his head down, and at one point he lays down. Apparently nobody was hurt in the making of this movie, and they did rehome Ed later on as Ross graduated to a not-so-naughty horse. But this is possibly the most evil pony of all time. When it decides to just lay down because it's done, I think it's great. So you can find that. Obviously, you can go to horseandcountry.tv and see the video, but all you have to do is type in Naughty Ed, and you will absolutely have memories from your childhood, that's for sure.
I definitely
now, your connection's a little bit bad, Victoria, but I want to tell everybody that finally the training series Team Fredericks is back on your program as well. I'm a huge fan of the Fredericks. And are you there? Can you let me hear you talk?
Yes, I'm still here. There is a bit of a delay I'm hearing, but yes.
There we go. So tell everybody what they can find on HRTV over here in America.
Yes, so the start of our training series is back on HRTV, and it's got training advice from Clayton Fredericks and Lucinda Fredericks, who are two extremely successful event riders. So do watch that. And we've also got the European Horseball Championships is showing this week as well. So if you head to hrtv.com, you'll find the listings of when you can watch.
I love horseball.
Right.
Horseball. It's fun. Horseball's fun. It's like It's like rugby on horses.
It is indeed. Because I've come from magazines, and quite often you get sent to go and learn a different sport or try it out, and I've tried all sorts of things like polo and vaulting. But a colleague that I used to work with got sent to try horseball, and there was just this great sequence of photos of her leaning down to grab the ball and leaning and landing in a heap on the floor. So that's my experience of horseball.
If only she had Naughty Ed. Naughty Ed would be the perfect horseball horse.
He's about the right size.
Yeah.
And if you can't reach the ball, he'd give you a helping hand to reach the floor, certainly.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you so much, Victoria. We appreciate you once again joining us, and we'll talk to you again next week. It's horseandcountry.tv. And, of course, you know in England where you can watch it on Sky 280 and here in the United States on HRTV. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you. See you next week.
I love how she says the word horsies.
I asked my friend from England, I said, do people normally say horsies? And she said no. So I think isn't she originally from Scotland?
Yeah, I think she is. Yeah, it might be her little thing too, but it sounds so cute when she says it.
it totally. I wonder if it's either cute or drives people crazy.
I don't know. Susan Nelson just posted, I love how she calls them horsies. So I guess we're not the only ones.
Ah, good. I was hoping.
I think it's cute. Well, we have a couple other news stories here. And one of them, I don't know if you want to do this one, because it's a little bit I'll do this one. And that is the Miami Dolphins great Bob Greasy. And I don't know if that was before your time or not. He was a Hall of Fame quarterback. I remember watching Bob Greasy play all those years ago. Well, he is a bit of a horse nut, and he owns a horse that Margie Engel actually won the $125,000 FEI World Cup Qualifier Grand Prix on at Palm Beach International Equestrian Center last Saturday. And in front of a packed crowd of 5,200 people, the 2000 Olympic gold medalist took it slow and steady to post back-to-back clear rounds on top of a 45-star field, 45 riders in that field. They had 11 jump-off riders, so she had some competition. This is a Dutch 12-year-old warm blood, co-owned by Greasy, who lives with his wife Shay, an average horsewoman in Jupiter, Florida, and also owned by Mike Pulaski of Hidden Creek Farm and Selma and Ken Garber. So it was kind of cool that we had a crossover into the football world down there in Wellington, which I'm just declaring is not the horse capital of the world. I'm just throwing that one out, and everybody from Wellington is now mad at me. So it is a neat place, though. It's a neat horsey place. Won't deny that.
Well, and nobody's actually from Wellington anyway. Like I said, the place is a ghost town 9 months of the year, but 3 months of the year is awesome. Lots of horses. Now, Glenn, I know we've talked about this, and we've had the people on. Did you get to watch Full Metal Jousting Sunday night? Because that was the premiere, and I know you've been out of town.
I did not get to watch it. I am actually going to watch it tonight. So it's taped. I have it. I'm ready to watch it. I can't wait to watch it. We didn't have a chance to watch it last night when we got home. So I'd be interested to hear if anybody else has seen it. They could post on our Facebook page and give us a little bit of a review. I'd like to know what people think about it. Did you tape it? Are you going to watch it?
No, I forgot about it. I didn't see that it premiered until this weekend, until this morning. But apparently each candidate for Full Metal Jousting had to go through extensive training, but they do have an ex-Marine stuntman, a professional polo player. Yummy. They're all good-looking. It doesn't matter. That's what I want to know is he hot? Anybody watch Full Metal Jousting, tell me if the polo player's hot, because I have a theory that they're all hot. Like, you can't play polo unless you're hot. Also, there's a bull rider and a guy that is a professional show jumper. So interesting to see all these guys from these different backgrounds joust like Heath Ledger did in that movie that was awesome. I forget what it was called.
They have a wide variety of guys on this show. They're from all different backgrounds. They all had to be horse people. They didn't want to teach people how to ride. They figured that was challenging enough. So these are people that have ridden before, and what they were doing is teaching them how to joust. There are a wide variety, and you can go to historychannel.com and just go to their shows lineup, and you'll see the pictures and the descriptions of all of them, and then some footage, too, of clanging and crashing. And it looks to me like they were hitting pretty hard in this show. I can't wait to watch it tonight. I want to see if they're any better than the reenactors were that were at the Renaissance fairs we worked at, which, by the way, wouldn't have taken too much to be better.
I've only seen the jousters at medieval times, and I'm pretty sure that's pretty staged considering they joust like 20 times a day. But the last man standing in Full Metal Jousting takes home a $100,000 cash prize. So there's actually a reason that they're beating each other up, and it's all for money. So with men and battling and blood and all that, you know it's going to be good. And it's jousting, and so there's horses. It's awesome.
So let me tell you here, I think that's the end of our news stories for today. How about the eventing story? Did you want to go over that?
Yeah, I'm starting to lose my voice, though. So I think there's a benefit for the Hitchcock Woods Foundation. It's going to be February 27th, and the guest of honor is Boyd Martin. Tickets are $75 per person, and for more information, you can call 642-0528, and I don't know what the area code is because I'm assuming this is in Florida because that's where Boyd is right now. But it's a benefit for the Hitchcock Woods Foundation. With Boyd Martin there.
All right, very good. And I wanted to we'll wrap it up a little bit early today because Jamie's voice is leaving her at this very moment. But I wanted to tell you about something that we saw on the way down. So we're driving down Route 75. We get into Florida, heading towards Ocala, and Jennifer looks over and sees this woman in a minivan. I'd say she was probably in her 50s. And, you know, you talk about everybody's whining about texting and driving, you know, how texting and driving is such an awful thing. And I try not to do it because I think it's dangerous. It's illegal in most places. This woman actually had a book open on the steering wheel, wide open on the steering wheel. And she was reading this book as she was going down the road with the car. Gently back and forth as she was driving down the road reading a book. So it doesn't matter if you text or not. People are going to find ways to do stupid things while driving.
Oh, my gosh. What's that little website, audible.com? Just seriously, spend $4 and download it. Reading, when I look at my phone while I'm driving or in the car, just in the passenger seat, and then I look back up, my vision is blurry because your eyes have adjusted to looking close. She couldn't see anything.
I'll tell you what, she had that book up and she was turning the pages down the highway. When I looked in my rear view, she was just going gently side to side like you see sort of a drunk person doing, you know. I have never seen anybody with a book on the steering wheel in plain sight reading the book while driving.
Did you do what I would have done, which is get right behind her and then lay on the horn or right next to her and honk the horn or somewhere close to her out of way and honk the horn?
She probably would have wrecked right into it. I would have scared her and she would have wrecked right into it. It would have been bad. No, I didn't.
I would have had a hard time with that. I would have had to call somebody. I would have done something. Citizen's arrest. Citizen's arrest.
Pull her over. Well, that was the interesting sight we saw in our travels was the woman reading the book while driving. We're going to wrap up today's show. We'll be back again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Hopefully, Jamie's voice will be feeling a little better. A lot of honey today, Jamie. Just a lot of honey.
My throat hurts. Sucks.
we'll say your three words, and then we'll get out of here.
All right. Please, spay, neuter, and geld. Here we go.
All right. Take care of that. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody.
Turn your music off.